Welcome to Teller to Teller. In this episode, we bring you a very special story. We meet a lady by the name of Judith Knowles Locke. Judith lives in Brisbane. She's in her late 50s. She's married with two sons. Judith has travelled all over the world. She's worked as a clinical psychologist for over 30 years. Prior to that, she worked as a teacher in both high school and university. Judith's also worked as a youth worker and ran youth groups with her husband. She's a gifted storyteller and since retiring has collaborated with her son to write wonderful storybooks for children. What makes Judith's story so amazing is that she has muscular dystrophy and has spent her life dealing with the condition and not letting it stop her from doing anything. Judith is at a time now where she feels that her journey might be nearing its end. And when I met with her, the main thing that she wanted to get across was that although she has had a wonderful life, she couldn't have done it without all of the wonderful friends and family she shares her life with. When I met Judith to record this story, she was in bed and she had a respirator mask on, and so she's a bit hard to understand at times, and the wheezing noise that you hear is the pump on the respirator. I hope you enjoy Judith's story. Judith talks about being diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when she was about 10 years old, and the effect that that had on her and her family.
My parents were told that your daughter has muscular dystrophy. She might live to the age of 14, maybe 19. And that's it. That's what they knew in those days. So that was devastating for my parents, and particularly my mother, who knew there was no cure for it. So basically, I just set about finding a way to get help for me. And that changed her life and changed mine too, because there was no medical help in those days.
It was around that time that Judith's mother took her to see a healer.
And she did her passion to find something outcome for me, took me to a healer. A healer is Tasmania. We lived in Melbourne at the time. And she honestly believed that he was going to heal me. And I believed it too. And for years, I was I guess I was indoctrinated with the belief that healing had made a difference to me. And I thought that for maybe 2 decades or more of my life. And it really wasn't until I was around about 30 years of age, even with my wisdom and knowing that scientifically I had been healed by that healer. I still believe that. Well, it's only my mother.
It wasn't until many, many years later that medical scientists found out that what Judith was actually suffering from was a type of muscular dystrophy called facioscapular humeral, often referred to as FSHD.
I guess it was in my late 20s. Because it had been named as facioscapular humeral dystrophy, which stands for the face of the humeral muscles, that's the actual form of muscular dystrophy that I have. And it's commonly known now as FSH. Muscular dystrophy. Anyway, people don't die from infestation disease really, because it's not that kind of disease. The people that die from disease early have disease disease. That's mainly boys.
Judith told me a little bit about her family and what it was like to grow up as a child with a disability.
I'm actually adopted. That's my adopted mother. I've not even known her since my mother. My father died 30 odd years ago. So anyway, having discovered as a child that I had a handicap, because that's what they were called in those days, I don't know where I got the strength of character. I guess I chose to believe in God at that stage, and I can literally say it was a personal choice. And my mother, had a belief in God too. But she was devastated by that, and her faith started to change. I'm thankful to my mother for never giving up, because she could have taken me out of a normal school and put me into a specialist facility, but she didn't. And because of that, I guess I sustained a lot of things. I was punched in the stomach, I was teased for all the things about my disability. But that gave me strength, whereas as I had gone out of the mainstream at that stage of my life, at the age of 9 or 10, I don't think I would have had as normal a life as I've had. Because I went to a normal high school, I went to a girls' school.
Judith told me that when she was 10 years old, she made a list of all the major cities that she wanted to see before she was 20 years old. And that when she was 7, she decided then that she wanted to be a teacher.
But when I was 10 years old, I guess this was a transforming thing of my life. I lay in bed one night and I said to myself, by the age of 20, I want to have seen 10 major cities in the world. That was my dream. And when I was 7 years old, and I will tell you, 7 years old, I decided I want to be a school teacher. Well, everybody thought that was a big joke, didn't they? You know, because my disability was starting to show up. I was walking slowly, things were changing. My father, who was a college there, but he didn't really accept the fact that I wanted to have a normal life. He never accepted I was going to be a school teacher. But my mother, on the other hand, never said no. It's not that I don't know whether she ever believed it, but she certainly never let me know that she didn't believe it.
The fact that Judith went to normal school and a normal high school meant that she had the opportunity to meet a bunch of friends, good friends, friends that she still sees to this day.
So subsequently, I went to school, I went to girls' school, normal school. They're still my friends today. In fact, one of my girlfriends was up last week from Melbourne. We've been friends since I was 12 years old. I've got another friend coming over on Tuesday, which is my best friend. She lives in West Australia. She's got red hair like you. She's still a redhead. She's my best friend in the world, known since I was 12 years old. And she's a great world traveller. We've done nerds at school, nerds, N-E-R-D-S, but we've done amazing things with our lives. So yeah, I decided when I was 10 I would set out to see the world. And yes, I've been to New York, and I've been to Singapore, Paris, Oslo, London, on it goes. But you know what? I have been on 33 different boats in my life. It would take me forever to tell you what all the boats were, but yeah, I've been around Manhattan Island, I've been on Lake Lucerne, up to Hardanger Fjord in Oslo, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I've been really lucky. But I could have done it on my own. I went with my sister to Egypt. I went to those places with my mother. My girlfriend, my sister's friend came along, so yeah. So then about the school teaching, well, I'm so lucky, I want to be a school teacher. So when did I got a diploma in general studies at Swinburne, Swinburne, S-W-I-N-B-U-R-N-E. It was a College of Technology down at Melbourne. It's our university.
Swinburne.
Okay.
Did you do Swinburne?
Swinburne, yeah. So I did my diploma there in psychology. Why did I do that? Because it was there to do. I was only 17. I didn't really know what I was going to do with my life. So I got my diploma.
Judith told me about a chance meeting when she went on a trip with her mother to Lake Ellerton, just north of Melbourne, that really started her teaching career.
My mother used to work at Presbyterian Ladies College in Melbourne as a secretary. Anyway, she got invitations from one of the mothers to go and visit at a place called Lake Eildon, which is north of Melbourne. Eildon, E-I-L-D-O-N. And she never took up those invitations usually. But on this occasion, she decided she would. So she said to me, do I want to go along? And I said yes, and I would have been 19. I teached my diploma, and we went up there, and I was walking at the time, I was in a wheelchair, but walking was really hard, I had scoliosis, a big curve of my back, not a big curve, but certainly it was very awkward. We got to the house, and we both looked at where the house was. Oh my God, it was up the hill, a really rocky hill. So we got out of the car and Mum took my arm. And there's this old guy in the garden, doing the garden, gardening. And we went past, he was in an old pair of shorts. We went up to the house, got up a couple of steps, got into the house. So I flopped down to the chair, I was exhausted. Not exhausted, but just uncomfortable. Anyway, before long the old guy comes into the house. got to get to about there. She said hello, got checks and everything. She sat down next to me. Is this going okay?
Yeah.
She sat down next to me. I was 19. I was quite nice looking. But anyway, without a word of hesitation, he said to me, just a second. He said, he introduced himself. He said, oh, I'm so-and-so's dad. I said, oh, hello. I was very shy in those days. He said, so what do you do? What have you been doing? So I said, oh, I just finished my diploma. He said, well, what do you want to do now? I said, well, I don't really know. But I've always wanted to be a school teacher. He says, is that right? Oh, why is that? I said, oh, it's because that's what I really want to do. Yeah, I said, I don't suppose people think I could do that, but that's what I want to do. Did you know what he said? He said, oh, well, that's interesting because I'm the Director General for Education in Victoria. If that's what you want to do, I can help you do it. Well, how lucky is that? And to be truthful, that has travelled. That cognitive thing has happened all my life. All my life, and it's still happening. So, anyway, wanted me to meet the Assistant Director General, who was not a very nice man at all. And I went to meet him, and of course with my disability, it was a big joke, wasn't it? You've got to be kidding. He never said that, but he'd been given instructions by the director, but he didn't believe it. So anyway, he said, oh, well, I've been told that I was so young, I hadn't struck a man like that before, and I'd struck lots of discrimination, believe me, and people talking to my mother as though I was a puppet, and, you know, I'd been teased all my life, and I'd faced all that discrimination, like all the staring, and because that's what it was like then. I mean, I was 57 and this was then. But I never gave up. God, I don't know where that came from. I think it was my faith. And sometimes my faith would get the better of me because I know one time I was so disappointed that I wasn't getting healed and nothing was... I still had my disability. And although I prayed until the cows came over, I still have a disability. One time I was so angry, I took a picture of Jesus and I took it down to an incinerator down the back behind the shed, put it in the fire. But, you know, my faith has never left me. Sometimes I get pretty pissed off, but not these days. So anyway, this guy said to me, well, where do you want to go and teach? What am I supposed to do with you, you know? So I lived in Box Hill in Melbourne at the time. So I was sent along to the local technical school for girls. And in those days, if you want to teach there, you had to go and so to a year's apprenticeship in the school, and then you went to teach your theory. You went to teach your diploma. So he sent me off to the principal of the technical school, girls' school in Box Hill. And it was about a week before Christmas. kid. It was a big school, probably 700 students. And I was walking, but just with difficulty. So she used to hit my back a lot. It was very hard for me to walk. But anyway, I had no reason not to think I was not going to have a go at this. I had this discrimination in the workforce because I never tried it. So I met the principal, Janelle Battleaxe. She was horrified. Definitely horrified. People with disabilities didn't teach in those days. And I was the first teacher with a disability in Victoria at the age of 19. Because she didn't know what to do with things. When she first met me and I had my diploma, she threw a dictionary at me. She said, look up a word. Go on, look something up, I want to see you do it. And then she gave me a piece of paper and a pair of scissors. She said, cut out a shape. And I thought, this woman's an idiot. This is high school, this is a primary school. I don't want a primary school teacher. So anyway, the same year we came to Queensland for the first time because a friend of mine offered us a house on Stradbroke Island. North Stradbroke Island for 2 weeks, and we went there. That's where I want my ashes spread, actually. It's my favourite place in the world, even though I've been around the world. Anyway, I got to thinking while I was up here on the beach, because that woman's a bitch. I'm not going to go and teach at that school. So I said to Mum, when we get back, I was with my father and mother, when we got back, I still got the letter. I wrote a letter, got Mum to type it. Dear Miss So-and-so, I've been at your school and I've been away on holidays. And I've got to thinking about it and you can take your job, I don't want it. I don't want it. So anyway, she contacted the dean of where I turned my diploma and said, who is that girl? Who do you think she is? She wrote me a letter. She said, why don't you find out? So she called me up and she said, I've been told about you, you can come on back. You can start. But don't come the first week of term. We don't know what to do with you the first week, we'll be too busy. Come the second week. So yeah, I started my school. I taught for several years. Well, I taught for 3 years. I had grade 9 and 10. And it was funny because my doctor, they wanted a letter. The school wanted a letter to say it was okay for me to go to teach there. He said, yeah, why not? She's got scoliosis, but child, don't give her grade 9 and 10 because that age won't suit her at all. They'll be too rebellious. So what did they do? They gave me grade 9 and 10, didn't they? I had a ball. I did everything with those kids. I was only about 2 years older than them, basically. Yeah. So, I was about 3 or 4 years older than them. Yeah. So, I began my teaching career. And then I got sick of it because I was temporary. They wouldn't put me on permanent because I had disability, that wasn't done. People would give me superannuation because, God, you don't give superannuation to a person with disability that we're not getting permanent to. So I thought, well, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. Have a good day there looking at these things.
So it was around then that Judith thought, enough's enough. Time for a change.
I went to psychology at Monash University. So I've just been incredibly lucky. It's been tough sometimes. So after I traveled the world, I came back and I got a job as a psychologist. Up here in Queensland. We moved to Queensland. So I applied for two jobs. I applied for psychology and one as a teacher. And I went with the psychology work. And the person that interviewed me, because it was in George Street in Brisbane, so I went along there. She came down, she was the director, and she didn't think to like it. She wasn't upset at all that was this building. I was in a wheelchair then. That's what I mean, I've been so lucky. I've had so much pain, so much despair, but I've been incredibly lucky as well. So she said, oh well, we'll go over to the park. I'll interview you over there. Can they show me a job? And I still say to myself, how have these things happened? How have they happened? I mean, it's just incredible. I did that, and after I'd been at Challenger where I was working as a psychologist, I decided to go to America. So my mother said, oh God, here we go again. We're off again. I went to Minnesota, and we lived there for about 18 months or more. I did my master's degree there, University of Minnesota, and about halfway through, I finished my master's degree, but halfway through, this is what the story of my life, I said to Mum, why don't we get Heather to come over? That's my sister. Why don't we get her to come over? She wasn't married either. Let's go to Egypt when I finished my master's degree. She said, what? So I said, let's go to Egypt when I finish my master's degree. So in typical fashion, Mum says, oh well, why not? If that's what you want to do, let's do that then. So yeah, I was a member of Quota, a women's organisation. Q-U-O-T-A, it's a women's and they had a club over in Minnesota as well. So we used to go to meetings. So what happens? I meet a woman there who's one of the best-known travel agents in Minneapolis, don't I? So she gets me the best deal. So the three of us go to Egypt. So what happens? We don't get a normal bus, do we, to travel around. So she arranged with the travel agent over there. We had our own comedy van. They ripped the middle seats out, put a ramp in, they took us everywhere. We had our own driver, we had our own courier. God help me. That's my photo over there. So I put them up because of my situation at the moment.
Judith pointed out for me all the photos that she's got stuck to the wall. All the places that she's travelled. Her in front of the pyramids, her in capital cities, in wonderful beaches. And when she says the situation that she's in now, what she means to say is that she's very, very ill and she doesn't know how much longer she has left. And that's why she's put the pictures all around her to remind her of the wonderful life that she's led.
So we come back and Twilly was over there. This young guy, Rich, who's picked up for dinner, he's younger than I am. He was standing right in the distance. I met him just before he went away. So he wrote me letters, because she was a country boy from Dubbo. She was like the cowboy, the lady we were at the time. So I came back to Queensland in 1983 to work for Lifeline, and they asked me to do some consulting for them. My friend said to me, what are you going to do now, Jude? I said, I think I'll get married. Well, who to? I don't know yet. Well, you don't know yet. I said, no, I think that's what I'll do next. So what happened? We got engaged about 3 months later. Six months later, we were married. We've been married 25 years.
Judith told me she'd been married about 2 years before she had her children. She had Chad in 1986 and Ryan in 1988.
Married two years. I had Chad in 1986, December '86, came around in May '88. Yeah, the joys of my life. They like chalk and cheese, and Chad and I fought on and off over the years because we are so passionate about life, and he says he's sharpened his axe on me, and yeah, he's incredibly loyal. He's an amazingly loyal human being. Ryan is an exceptional human being also. So you're a very close family, and Ryan said to me one day when he was about 14, thanks, Mum, for being my mother, because you taught me how to dream. And I guess that's a great gift, to teach someone how to dream, because dreams have given me my life. So my mother taught me to dream, or at least never stopped me from dreaming. Can I think I've taught my kids to dream?
At this point, looking back over her life, Judith cannot overstate the importance of dreaming, or the undeniable richness and joy she experienced with her friends and family.
And now, because we think we are not terribly ill, I hope to have taught many people how to dream. I believe I have, because now that I'm at this stage of my journey is coming to an end, I understand. The rewards are amazing. God's gifts of rewards to me are totally amazing. Because since I've been at this stage of my life, I've been blessed by so many visitors who come to tell me their story. And I didn't realise I touched their lives. There's been lots of people. I've had letters from overseas. I've had lots of emails. Can I realise I've been so blessed by the fact that I didn't, I made my dreams come true. But I could have made those dreams come true if I haven't had other journeys, other people to take the journeys with me. So my mother never stopped me dreaming. My husband has never stopped me dreaming. He said to me recently, when he cried and cried a lot, that I've enabled him to dream also. He never thought life was possible. He opened his eyes to dreaming, and he's done many things himself. So don't block him to dreamers. When I say dreamers, they dream, but they make their dreams come true. And I have absolutely no regrets because I've made all my dreams come true. I wanted to be a school teacher and I was. I wanted to travel the world and I did. I want to have the greatest love of my life that I have. I want to have more children than I have. God, I'm just so lucky. To have great friends as well. I have amazing girlfriends, amazing boyfriends. So that's just a relief. So that's my story, I guess. I've just been so lucky.
I hope you enjoyed today's story. And remember, just like Judith, everyone's got a story and everyone's a teller.